Hello?
Is it me you're looking for?
Oh no, what do you want?
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
Your Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple, Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Hello, and welcome to Listen to The Prophets. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am joined, as always, by Sir Andrew Leyland, my friend
Is
because of his English accent.
You're looking for?
And Dr. Bill Robinson.
I am a Kavarian tiger bat wrangler.
This time around. Okay. And we are here today to continue on our journey through every episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, the underrated Star Trek spinoff. We are currently up to Season 4, Episode 22, so we are making significant progress into this series at this point. Any sort of preamble that you boys would like to discuss before we jump into our episode?
Did we want to do any more Discovery talk?
No.
Okay, all right.
We've already done that / not recorded that yet.
Yeah.
But I thought we said last time that we were going to do a little bit more not talk Discovery talk that we haven't recorded yet.
No, we're going to not talk Discovery not talk yet not.
Because as far as these episodes are concerned, it's long finished and we've done an episode about it. But as far as we're concerned, there's two episodes yet that we've not seen yet.
So are we going to record this now or record this when we get home?
We'll do record it when we get home. Yeah.
So that'd be no then.
Okay. We'll just let it go then.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
We're talking about for the cause.
Desperate terrorists begin their final assault.
They should be hunted down and destroyed.
But the real threat could be closer to home.
Cassidy Yates.
Cassidy. Working for the Maquis? That's impossible.
Now caught between desire.
Miss me?
And duty.
Everything's been building to this.
Is Sisko sleeping with the enemy?
I need to know what your orders were.
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
For the Cause, Season 4, Episode 22, directed by James L. Conway, story by Mark Gerard O'Connell, teleplay by Ronald D. Moore, guest starring Kenneth Marshall as Michael Eddington, Penny Johnson as Cassidy Yates, Tracy Middendorf as Ziao, John Prosky as Brathau, and Stephen Vincent Leigh as Reese. The episode aired on May 6th, 1996, and the plot went something like this. The Federation plans to deliver several The Federation plans to deliver several replicators through Deep Space Nine to Cardassia, following attacks by the Klingons that debilitated their industrial base. Lieutenant Commander Michael Eddington debriefs the senior command staff that the Federation and Starfleet fear that the shipment will be intercepted by the Maquis. Eddington and Station Security Chief Odo warn Captain Sisko that they believe his girlfriend, freighter Captain Cassidy Yates, is working with the Maquis. Sisko denies it, but instructs Worf in the Defiant to follow Yates' ship, the Zosa, when it next departs. Worf confirms that the Zosa delivered supplies to a Maquis ship in the Badlands. Disheartened, Sisko insists to be present when they attempt to catch Yates' next shipment, once they hear of its schedule. He, Odo, and Worf wait aboard the Defiant at the expected time, but the Zosa does not show up. Odo suggests this might have been a ruse to lure Sisko away from Deep Space Nine. However, the Zosa soon does arrive, and Sisko tasks Yates to her actions. Yates claims she has only been delivering medical supplies to the Maquis, but for herself, she suspects that maybe she, too, had been used by the Maquis to lure her from the station. Fearing deception, Sisko lets Yates go and sets course back to Deep Space Nine. Meanwhile, with Sisko's absence, Eddington takes command and orders the senior crew to prepare transport of the replicators to an inbound Vulcan craft. Major Kira walks into the storage bay where Eddington is alone with the replicators, and he knocks her unconscious, revealing himself to be with the Maquis. Dun dun dun! Eddington transports himself and the replicators to a waiting ship and flees the station. Eddington later contacts Sisko to reveal his alliances and that the Maquis are only at conflict with Cardassian, though promise future trouble if Federation aids them. Sisko vows to capture and arrest Eddington himself. Later, Yates returns to the station alone, having dropped off her crew in the Maquis Badlands, as to turn herself in, believing this was what Sisko wanted. She tells Sisko that she had intended no harm and only felt a duty to aid the Maquis. Sisko and Yates have an emotional embrace before she is taken off to the brig. In a side plot, Garak has taken interest in Gul Dukat's half-Bajoran daughter, Tora Zial, who is living in Kira's charge on Deep Space Nine, and recently visiting his tailor shop. Garak would like to become romantically involved, but fears that Zial has been instructed to kill him, since Garak had been responsible for the torture and death of Dukat's father years ago. Garak tries to speak to Kira to understand Zial's intent, but has severe self-doubt. Eventually, he decides to invite her alone to a holosuite, even if she intends to kill him. There, Zial reveals that she has no intent to kill him, but also does not need his companionship. She only wishes to seek his knowledge of Cardassia, as she has never been there. Garak and Zial begin their relationship. I rather enjoyed this episode. I thought the whole Maquis thing kind of... I was going to say coming to a head, but it doesn't come to a head. It just kind of ramps up, because we're going to see a lot more of the Maquis stuff. But I thought a lot of it was unexpected. First time through watching this, I did not really think Eddington was, you know, I didn't suspect him. I had thought he was just there to be an annoyance to Odo, which actually in reading in the companion, that was his purpose, and they later decided that just having him as an annoyance to Odo wasn't good enough, and that's why they went to this. But that was what, you know, that was the conclusion I had. And, excuse me.
Excuse me. Every time you cough, I sneeze.
There you go. It's from across an ocean. I'm having an influence on you. So the whole Cassidy thing turning out to be reality, that she was aiding the Maquis, that really surprised the heck out of me. Even rewatching this, I had forgotten that aspect of it, and I kept expecting at some point somebody to say, yeah, that was just the way it appeared, and somebody set her up, and it really wasn't, you know, she didn't do it with knowledge, but no, she did. I thought that was a very, very bold step by them in this series, to have a character who, you know, they had you develop a liking for, and then to do that, and not necessarily have her turn into a bad guy like you kind of did with Eddington, but even Eddington kind of had a motivation. He was just keeping his motivation hidden up until the point when it benefited him to let it out. So I thought this was a well-written story. I thought it was, you know, the revelations in it were kind of cool, and everybody's characterization seemed good. I particularly, like, went to the point when Eddington, somebody asks him about, like, what he thinks of the Maquis, and he makes a comment to the effect of, you know, that's not my concern. My concern is just to follow my orders. And I just thought that was great, considering the turn that he makes at the end.
Oh, yeah, when he's so visceral with his response.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this, and I'm wondering what you boys think.
You want to go first, Bill, or do you want me to?
No, this was... Yeah, this is what one of the things we've been waiting for when this whole plot kicks off with the betrayal of Eddington, and he's the first time I saw this, I never saw this coming. I mean, when he turns and he shoots Kira with the phaser, you're like, what? And it's like, oh man, everything just boom, boom, one after another. The shoes drop, and you're just kind of just scratching your head, wondering what's going on. Loved it.
I thought this was a corker. I really did.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
Wait, hold on. I gotta look up my English. Okay, English dictionary. Yeah.
It was very good.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
Ooh, it were really good, this one.
Oh, see, now I understand.
Speak English, Andy.
You can tell it's a Ronald D. Moore script. I thought that the build-up of where it was going with the Cassidy and the Eddington storylines were brilliantly done. Unlike the Muse, even though the B story is only tangentially related to the A story, it was still exceptionally well done and interesting because, you know, Andy Robinson. I thought that there was a level of depth to this script that just makes it so rich for discussing, such as the reason that Cassidy Yates thinks it's acceptable to help the Marquis, why is she going against the Federation, everything that Eddington says at the end about the Federation being as insidious as the Borg, giving the Marquis a motivation beyond, well, we just need this group of people to set up the new spin-off series Voyager. Deep Space Nine does far more with the Marquis than Voyager ever did, and it just builds on itself so beautifully throughout the 44 minutes. It's an absolutely cracking episode with so much to it, so much to explore, such rich character developments, brilliant performances by everyone across the board. It's I don't think I'm giving anything away to say I think this is a 5-star.
Yeah, I think you gave
okay,
a lot away.
Okay, good night,
there.
Everybody.
I definitely think you gave something away there, but I could be wrong. Now, one of the things I thought was really cool about this way, the way this one sets up, that I just wanted to touch on, is the way Eddington decides to poke the bear at the end.
Mm.
Which helps to create the Jean Valjean Javert relationship between the two of them that's going to continue from this point forward. And I just, you know, what do you think about that as far as his motivation? Why? Well, first of all, where did you see him, if you remember? Where do you see him, or where did you see him going into this? Did you suspect that he was going to turn, or did you kind of just see him as a comic, not a comic, but as a foil to Odo, as I did? And then when he does turn, like, you know, what do you think of his motivations at that point?
When I originally saw it, I just liked that they had a little bit of background colour to the series, that we were seeing the same faces in the background, because unlike a starship, we were in different areas on different missions every week. You would see the same faces around. It would be the same security guards. So I liked they had this recurring role that originally, to me, just felt like that's all he was. He was just a recurring background player. He was never really going to amount to anything, really. And there's an interesting case with Eddington that he actually mentions in an earlier episode that he knows he's never going to rise any higher than he is. Right. So his motivation for joining the Marquis actually makes a lot of sense, in that he's realised that he's not going anywhere with the Federation. He's never going to see himself in a red uniform, which is what he thinks he deserves. And then off he goes, and he's turned to the Marquis. The scene at the end were, as with all good, I don't want to say villains, because I don't consider him a villain, but
they
all good,
right.
Yeah, all good antagonists. He explains perfectly why he thinks he's right in doing what he's doing. And it's not the first time that Deep Space Nine has asked us to look at exactly what the Federation is and analyse it and question it and not just accept blindly that it's this utopia where everyone's nice. One of the themes of Deep Space Nine is, what is the cost of utopia? And we actually had that in past tense.
and we had that in the episode with the changelings where they came to Earth, and this idea, what does it cost to protect Utopia? And the problem the mistake Eddington makes at the end is that he's explaining his point to Commander Sisko, who's just having none of it. Sisko just thinks the guy's an asshole for what he's done and isn't afraid to tell him. And there's that brilliant bit where Sisko just cuts communication before Eddington can follow up with anything. But I think the writer, Ron Moore, did a brilliant job of explaining why he's turned, his reasons for turning, and why the Marquis would be an acceptable alternative to Starfleet for him. Because if we go all the way back, that's one of the reasons this episode is so rich, is that it is delving very deeply, not just into the continuity of Deep Space Nine, but also into the Next Generation and tangentially Voyager. Because it was in the Next Generation that the Marquis were essentially just kicked off the planets. They redesigned, if I'm remembering this correctly, they redesigned the border points between Cardassian and Federation space, and the Federation basically said to the humans who lived on those planets, right, you're going to have to move or live under Cardassian rule.
Yeah.
So you can actually understand, yeah, you can actually understand why they're pissed off about that. So it's rooted in a genuine and believable motivation that I think this episode really pulls off exceptionally well. And the guy playing Eddington, who was also Krull, I can't remember his name. What was his name?
Corwin.
Yes. He really does a good job of selling throughout this entire episode and these previous appearances that he's by the book. He's just an officer. He doesn't really care either way. He has his orders. He'll do what he does, and then he goes home at the end of the night. So that when they swip it around here, they do a really good job with it. And the writing is just, it's not obvious where this is going to go. Because even at that moment where Eddington goes to Sisko, and he says, look, I'm really not comfortable arresting the girlfriend of the captain. You take him at his word.
Yeah.
And it's only when you look back at it, you go, you sneaky son of a bitch.
Yeah, well, I think that was a great misdirection in this episode, was first of all, actually having Cassidy be guilty of what they were accusing her of, and secondly, to have you looking so closely at her that you're not even thinking about Eddington turning.
Right.
There's no reason to suspect him for a second until he does what he does.
Yeah, until he shoots Kira, and then you're like...
Whoa. Well, no, but just before that, when they start talking about the transporters and everything, like you're scratching your head saying, why is he doing that? You know, like, that's the first second to suspect him, really. Up until that moment, there was never anything.
But then when you look back at it, he's manipulated all of this from the get-go. He's setting Cassidy up from the beginning of the episode to get caught, and he's pushing Sisko and Odo. That's the big surprise about this episode. Eddington's relying on Sisko's relationship with Cassidy to cloud his judgment. He's actually actively relying on that as part of his plan, which is very clever. But he pulls the wool over Odo's eyes, totally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another great thing about this. Odo's not infallible. And so the characterization of everybody in this one is just brilliant. What I really love about it as well, at the end, neither Cassidy nor Sisko blame each other for the choices they've made. It's a really remarkable adult relationship in Star Trek that ties into his relationship with Jake, which let's not forget, this does not get anywhere near the credit that it deserves for its depiction of African-American man raising a child on his own. This was groundbreaking.
Well, the question I have for you there is, again, going to the final discussion between Cassidy and Sisko at the end of the episode. I think a lot of that depends on the extent to which their relationship has progressed. Now, they do show the two of them, you know, that they're, you know, very romantically involved. You know, we do see that they're sleeping together. Is it something where they're dating and they've reached a point where they're sleeping together? Or is it a point where they're dating and they kind of think, you know, this is going to be my life partner? Because honestly, just before you give your thoughts on that, is
right.
my thoughts are, is it, if it's the second and not the first, then I think Sisko should be more angry at the end.
I think it's on the cusp of becoming that. I don't think, because Jake loves her. Jake thinks she's wonderful. He's made up that his dad's found somebody. I think that neither Cassidy or Sisko are quite ready to take that next step yet, which would be, at this point in the relationship, moving in together. And I don't think they're quite there yet. But I liked that they didn't fall out with each other, because Jadzia only has one scene in this episode, but she rather jubilantly goes, well, at least she's not smuggling arms. She's trying to put a positive spin on what Cassidy's doing. I think you're right. If Cassidy had been doing something more serious, I think if she'd been arming them, if she'd been smuggling weapons or things that would be detrimental to the Federation's war effort, I think he would have been a lot harder on her and maybe called time on the relationship. As her role in all of this was to deliver medical supplies and then be set up, I think he's a lot more forgiving of her than he is of Eddington.
Well, I think a couple of years on Rorapenty is going to put some time on her, some time on their relationship. But I just think there should have been a little bit more undertone of anger on Sisko's part, because he should be angry at her for doing something so stupid.
But I think his anger is reserved for Eddington, because Eddington's betrayed the uniform and what Starfleet stands for. Yeah, whereas Cassidy was behaving true to her own nature.
Yeah, she was trying to be benevolent, but just the same needs. I think he should be more angry, because they are on the cusp of a serious relationship and she endangered in a way that she shouldn't have.
But they both ended up lying to each other. So, and he goes to her and he gives her an out. Sisko goes to her and gives her that opportunity to say, all right, when he goes to her and says, let's just take off for a week, let's just go to Risa, we'll do nothing but sit by the pool and have massages and drink Mai Tais, it'll be great. There's nothing here that, you know, Kira and O'Brien can't take care of, I've owed some leave time, there's nothing you're doing that's overly serious, come on, let's just go away for a week. And he gives her an out, and it's beautifully acted by both of them, because she knows he's giving her that out, even though she doesn't actually know that he knows.
I'm definitely nitpicking here, but that was just like one of the thoughts I had, and I think the two of us keep interrupting Bill, so I'm curious, you know, what did you think about all this, Bill?
Sorry, Bill. No, you guys have pretty much covered what I was going to mention, so
I got nothing.
No, it's okay.
I'm sure there's a bowel movement you can tell us about.
Please. I did mute when I had to pass wind, so.
See? Bill is maturing before our very eyes.
Yes.
What do you think about Eddington's need/desire to call out Sisko at the end?
Oh, well, yeah, that. I was more. The bigger thing for that was that Sisko doesn't really care, you know, he's more pissed off that Eddington has betrayed him.
Oh yeah, I think he's more his anger is more that he was directly betrayed as opposed to the Federation being betrayed, although yeah, I do think he has elements of both.
Right, but still he's like, you know, of course he doesn't get, you know, I don't care.
that's what's great about this one, he never falls down that bad acting trap.
No, he's you know, just cold. He's Hawk. He turns into Hawk here. And just lays it into him and just cuts him off before he can finish his sentence. Or before he can give him a rebuttal. A nice little thing about the romance that I liked was the when she gets up to leave and he grabs her pillow and then sleeps on it. Now, come on. You guys have done that, right? No? Yes?
Maybe.
Oh, yeah, come on. Yeah. Real men can admit it. You'd be like, oh yeah, just take her pillow because it smells nice. It doesn't smell like my pillow, like a sweaty man. Oh, now, okay, in the cargo bay, when he gives her, for some reason, all I could pop in my head was a scene from Casablanca when they're at the plane, and, you know, I mean, although it's a different, you know, what's said is different. You know, he's like, you know, come with me. We could just leave, drop everything we're doing. Is there a movie where that's pretty much said like that, or there's two characters that are each hiding something from each other? I swear I've seen that before, but I can't think of what movie it was. Hey, you guys got anything?
Coming up blank, sorry.
There doesn't seem to be even anything in the companion about that, and they're normally quite open and honest.
Yeah, I just
about taking their influences from films.
Yeah, it was just such a powerful, you know, he's like, you know, we could just leave, we could leave all this behind, you know, like, he, just like you said, you know that I know that, you know, you're doing this, and they both give the list. Yes, it was brilliantly acted by the two. Do you think that, I was noticing Eddington through the show, do you think he could have been a human version of C-3PO with some of his turns and mannerisms, his very, just like little looks? I don't. That's what I kind of got from that. Okay. Again, and we brought this up in the past. Why is Odo on the Defiant? There's no need for Odo to be on the Defiant. He's the frickin' station security chief.
Yeah, but doesn't he go because they're going to have to formally arrest
that what?
Cassidy.
No! That's. Okay, again, there that would be on the station. She's not on the station. If he's going to arrest
her, it's crimes committed using the station.
I am
reaching.
That's a reach.
Yes, it is.
Because
in this particular,
you could say
instance,
that the jurisdiction belongs to the Federation.
But why? Why is it the jurisdiction of the Federation? If it's occurring on Deep Space Nine, which, lest we forget, is not a Federation outpost per se, it's a Bajoran outpost with a Federation presence, then it makes sense, in my head canon anyway, that Odo would have to be the one that formally charged and arrested Cassidy Yates.
Okay, he doesn't have deputies to do that? He doesn't have...
He does, but, again, head canon, no prize in it. Headcanon, no prize in it. This is such a serious offence. Odo wants to do it himself because we know he's a control freak.
In this instance, it didn't bother me, honestly, that Odo was involved in something he normally wouldn't be, because I think this one became more personal, so I could see him wanting to just be involved anyway. You know, almost out of almost due to his relationship with Sisko, out of his friendship with Sisko.
I was just going to say same thing. Because of his relationship with Sisko, he would want to make sure this was done properly.
I still think it's kind of...
It's not the most egregious, let's put a regular member of the cast on Defiant, even though they don't need to be the thing we've ever seen. So I think on the scale, I think I can give this one a pass.
Alright, I'll let this one pass. I had a few nitpicks I found. Other than that,
pick some nits, my friend.
Now, in the Garak Zial plot, which we haven't talked about, I watch with the captions on because sometimes I catch things that I don't catch otherwise. So when Quark is in Odo's shop and he's taking in his pants, Quark says to Garak, "The pants are a meter too long."
A meter's a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that too. That
should have been trailing off whatever he was stood on, shouldn't it?
Should have been like a millimeter too long.
Yeah, like a centimeter. I'm like, a meter? You got 3 feet of freaking...
maybe a meter is different by their measurements.
What is that, a space meter?
Parking meter. That.
And we have a new sport. We have space handball hockey.
Yep.
Or whatever that's called. And Nerys plays dirty.
Well,
dirty,
yes.
Dirty sport.
That's to be expected. That's in character.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Whatever it takes to win.
Whatever it takes to win, exactly. Now, I don't think the synopsis was saying that Garak is trying to initiate a romantic... to become romantically involved with Zial.
I think that's all he just wants. Some performance.
I'll be honest with you. I think she's very flirty with him in a way that perhaps wasn't necessarily in the script. But I think she's very... She's clearly coming on to him, I think. That's how I read it. And it's a shame that she doesn't come back as Zial anymore. They replace her with another actor for her next couple of appearances.
Because we need a third Zial.
Yeah.
Well, she's growing, you know, changing. Changes. So what do you think of the plot? It was...
With the Zial plot, I keep... I don't know why, but I kept thinking about The Princess Bride. the Dread Pirate Roberts and Wesley. Every night, he'd say, "Good night, Wesley. I suspect tomorrow I will kill you." You know, that kind of thing. That's the way I kind of felt with Garrick and Zial. You know,
like,
she's going to kill him. It's just a matter of when.
I guess I won't be needing this when he comes in with the phaser.
Yeah, I like that. And it wasn't really comical, but it was amusing just the same.
Again, that's how Andy Robinson plays it, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, there's a moment that moment though that he brought that gun in her to kill her is quite a dark moment, but the way he plays it with that little twinkle in his eye that he has, he gets away with making it a laugh.
Let's lay on some rocks in our clothes.
Yeah, so I mean, the Zial Garrick subplot is notable only because of what it will do to Kira. Really, she doesn't want this relationship happening, and it works. It works as well as it does because Tracy Middendorf is clearly playing it as flirtatious, and Andy Robinson's just brilliant every time we see him.
Yeah,
I like his body language in the elevator when they're both in there.
I thought that subplot, you know, it didn't feel important as we were watching it, but it was still kind of entertaining as a side light.
Yeah, I think it's more of a B plot where they're setting stuff up for the future.
Yeah, but it was still entertaining, so it didn't feel like you were just killing time, or that, you know, we're going to give you something that we have to give you and it's not entertaining, but it's going to move it forward. It is setting things up for the future, but I still thought it was entertaining in its own way. It's a little bit of a Cardassian, Bajoran, rom-com in the middle of this thing.
Hmm. Could Sisko be any more obvious with his questioning of her at dinner? So,
what
path do you take to get to the blah 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 blah?
And what cargo will you be carrying? And at precisely what time will you be entering that particular nebula? Why do you ask? No reason.
No. He's like, he's on to me. And now they're having an... That's a real pissy move, you know. Wait, you're gonna inspect me? I'm gonna call my boyfriend, station captain. Ben, I have to get this, you know. Yeah, I see. Sleep with the captain, get out of the inspection. That's the other
I story. Do have a question about that.
Go ahead.
What would Eddington have done if they'd found contraband on her ship, though? Because that would have screwed up his entire plan to get Sisko off the station.
Oh, they would have just said, well, even though we found some, we need to follow through to see if we can find the link to the Maquis, you know, then
right.
he might have suggested,
right, we've found evidence that this is happening. I suggest we don't say anything and follow her on our next meeting. Right, okay.
Yeah.
What was the cargo that she was giving, was that contraband, or was it just the fact that she was giving it to them the problem?
The fact that she was giving it to them.
So if it was not contraband, then you couldn't arrest her for having it anyway.
No. They might have let's say
they were just looking for evidence that she was.
Crew member Bob has like a Tholian spider cat on his ship that's like strictly not allowed. You know, oh my god, it could destroy Bajor's ecosystem, and he happened to have it as a pet on his ship. You know, that could be considered contraband.
Assuming what she had that she was delivering, these medical supplies, were not contraband, then there was no point in inspecting a ship. That would be the weakness to it.
Well, no, the smart thing would be to put a tracker on it to see where it goes.
Because, we found she has stuff she could be delivering to the Maquis, but she's allowed to have it. So what's the point? So basically, by inspecting her ship, we've clued her in to the fact that we are going to, you know, that we are suspicious of her.
But wasn't the point that, not that she had it so much, that why did she have it?
Yeah, but wouldn't it have made more sense from the start to say, we think she may be delivering supplies to the Maquis, let's track her, let's trace her, let's follow her?
Maybe they just wouldn't allow Odo to do that without probable cause. He's not allowed to just tail any ship he thinks may be up to something. Even Odo's not that paranoid.
Okay.
Yeah, but in a sense, that's what they do because they don't have time to search. So Ben's like, all right, send Worf out to follow her. So is he doing an illegal trail, or, you know, has he violated her rights?
And technically, one could argue yes, but the Defiant is merely on a training cruise checking its new cloaking device works.
So why couldn't you do that from the start without inspecting her anyway? Why clue her
Sisko
in that you suspect
needs,
her? Although Sisko might want her to
that
know.
Evidence. Yes, Sisko needs proof that she's up to something she shouldn't be.
No, but, you know, here's what I'm thinking is, you could get away with following her, like you said, the Defiant's just out on a training cruise, blah, blah, blah. But maybe Sisko wanted to clue her in that she's under suspicion, and in his own way, without saying the words, get her the message of, hey, you may not want to do this because they're onto you.
Yeah. All right, yeah, I'll go with that.
I don't know that that's his motivation. I'm not 100% sure. You know, it would. Then you start coming down to what's more important to Sisko, his obligations to Starfleet or his obligations to Cassidy, and that becomes a real wormhole to fall into. Mm-hmm. You know, that gets really complex as far as motivations and everything, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I like to think he could do the, hey, you know, if you are doing something wrong, don't do it because they suspect you. Because if she doesn't do it, then, you know, he served his purpose anyway. He stopped the delivery from to the Maquis and everything's good.
And then Edding has to find... Then they have to find another way to get him off the ship, off the station.
Now, isn't it foolish of her that they were going to inspect her and she was smuggling things that she shouldn't be? Isn't it foolish of her to say, eh, they're not after me, you know, and just go make the delivery anyway?
Well, she says that she...
It's foolish of her to hang around for 6 hours.
Yeah. Well, she does say that, you know, that she was... that they pressured her, that she had to deliver this, that it was desperately needed. So, I mean, and she thinks she's... she feels she's doing more of a humanitarian mission, although illegal, than, you know, she's not... Like, I don't think she would smuggle weapons. I think that would be a line for her to cross as well. Because we mentioned that earlier, that, you know, what if she had been smuggling weapons? I don't think she would. I don't think that's in her character.
Yeah, well, they definitely make her what she's doing have less shades of gray than what Eddington is doing. Because she's trying to do something humanitarian that you could all kind of sit back and say, well, at least I understand the motivation, it's okay. Eddington is openly defying Starfleet and going, you know, totally against the rules and actually now setting himself up as an adversary, as opposed to trying to somehow correctly change the way Starfleet is looking at things.
You guys are like the Borg. You assimilate people and they don't even know it.
Yeah, he's got a level of anger that was never revealed before.
Never going to advance.
And I think it's well played. Like, I don't think it's like, oh, this came out of nowhere. I think it's explained away. You know, part of what you said, Andy, that, you know, he was never going to advance any further, and, you know, here he is now becoming like the head of the Maquis. So, you know, there's a lot going on there, and it's kind of cool, and it was kind of enjoyable, and I really liked it. Mm-hmm. And Andy's giving it 5 stars. But you know what? How many stars do you think Blaine would give it?
6.
Let's see.
He'd find some way to give it 6.
Well, let's see. Sing me in, Bill.
Blaine says, what does he say? We're going to find out when Paul reads the email.
Okay, Blaine says, hi guys. It's sad how universal the experience of loving someone who isn't the person you thought they were seems to be. We've got some good Garrick here. We see Kira doing something that gives her a hobby other than praying or falling in love in Bajoran with Bajoran political figures. And I just love...
Another notch in her belt.
And I just love that Quark spots the reverse psychology that Eddington used to get Sisko off the station, even if it was in the context of Kira protecting Zial instead. I also like Eddington's interpretation of the Federation interest in the Maquis. This is a series that thrives in shades of gray, and this is a prime example. The pain Sisko is going through is palpable, but he still does his job. I was still young and naive enough to have not gone through an experience like this when this first aired, but now I hold this episode in much higher esteem than I originally did. Blaine. I'm sorry that Blaine has had that level of experience. I do think there's always peeling layers and learning about the people, even the people you love and you've lived with for years and years. But you hope that you never get to a point of betrayal. But that's something. The betrayal is from Eddington, not really so much from Cassidy. I think Cassidy, like I said, if I was Sisko, I would just be angry at her for endangering our future. That would be my anger. Not so much that I would take it as a personal, affront that she's doing that. At least that's how I see it. How about you guys?
See, I liked the whole adult nature of it, that he was willing... I mean, he probably was a little bit angry with her, but he wasn't willing to let that get in the way of their relationship. He's willing to let go and forgive. So essentially what he's doing there is showing Starfleet at its best, whereas Eddington is showing it at its worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. All right, so I guess it's time to rate the episode. Andy already did. I'm gonna just keep getting on you for breaking format on us. Andy said 5.0. I'm gonna come in slightly lower. I'm giving it a 4.5. I think it was a very, very solid episode. Just about everything about it I liked. As the dog jumps and gets tangled in my headphone wire. Okay, I liked the episode, really, but I didn't think it was up at that upper echelon, which is, which 5 represents. I'm going to give it a 4.5, just bring it just a slight notch below that. So, but there really, I really have no criticism to speak of. I think the things we've talked about have more been just kind of exploring what the motivations were and all, but not really criticizing this one at all, because I don't really think there's much to criticize. Doctor?
Well, I think I'm going to side with my English overlord.
It's because of his accent, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. He pushed me to that 0.5 extra, and I'm going to give it 5 industrial replicators. Like, what's an industrial replicator? Is it like make whole cars or something? Or,
yeah, it's a replica that can make other machinery.
Yeah. Make a factory.
Well, that's what they said. Oh, we need to make a fact. I'm like, how big is this thing? And it fits on a Vulcan freighter. What does it come out piece by piece, and you got to put it together like a Lego set?
They're going to put this Lego washing machine together.
I want to use the replicator to make a Dyson sphere. So
we're going to do some email.
That's it for the cause. And now I guess we'll do some email.
I have a chapter of the book as well, and it's I'm not going to read the whole thing. I did a summary.
All right, so why don't we do 3 emails, and then we'll go to the chapter.
All right, well, I'll do Faith's first one, because I did the first half of this last time, didn't I?
Did you?
Yes, we covered the first 3 paragraphs.
Oh, so you're just doing this so that you can get out of reading a whole one. Go ahead.
No, I have already read it. I'm contractually, I am allowed to split my emails up.
That's only if you do the synopsis.
Oh, okay, right. Well, our first email is from Faith Gilliam again. Father Kars, also known as Garrett, goes to the Cardassian Spa. Now, the first couple of paragraphs of this email we covered last time. Do you remember us talking about Firefly and Cowboy Bebop? But we left some of it because Faith specifically targets the episode we've just watched, Father Kars. So I'll pick up where I left off. I like to... Oh, I've done that then. Is it just me, or does Kira seem a little petulant whenever she raises what Bajor did and didn't get from the Federation in comparison with other cultures? This doesn't happen too often, but it always sounds a bit like a child comparing sizes of cookies with other kids. Anyway, was Bajor the only planet that the Cardassians strip-mined? I thought Bajor was a system, which means they should have more planets than just the one. We know they have habitable moons from several episodes now, so why did the Federation only help the one planet? And I think we discussed that last time.
Well, you know, those other planets, you know, that's like North Bajor.
Every planet has a north. I love watching briefing meetings. They seem so exciting, efficient, and succinct. The meetings I've attended have been either brief nor exciting. They could really have been called productive either. You go to the same meetings at work I do, Faith, evidently. Mm. It's good to know that noisy, complaining neighbours aren't limited to anyone, not even the captain of the station. While it's amazing that Eddington does such a good job with gaining the confidence of everyone, the part that I'm impressed with is about how well he and Odo got along. Odo and Eddington seem to make a very good team, and Odo doesn't even object when Eddington asks to discuss a detail about the mission in private. Yes, technically it isn't Odo's business, as the arrest will take place on the Defiant as a Starfleet operation, etc. But it's still a an arrest from a Bajoran.
Just keep reading later on, buddy.
Okay. But Odo is a bit neurotic about knowing everything about every mission that even tangentially involves DS9. So the fact that Odo doesn't even hesitate to leave Eddington alone with Sisko to discuss an ongoing security issue, even a Starfleet one, is indicative to me of the trust that even Odo has in him. Eddington is a fantastic double agent. I wish they'd kept this game running longer with us knowing he was a traitor, but no one else knowing, that kind of thing.
I have to say, I always like that when you know something more than the characters do, and you know, just the suspense aspect of it that you get with that. I always enjoy that, so I agree with Faith on that.
I loved Eddington's reactions to everything in this episode. His discussion with Worf and O'Brien about the Maquis is very telling of what he thinks of Starfleet officers. They are drones with no opinions except to the hierarchy. I do what I am ordered. Everything else is an indulgence. His watching Sisko as the captain tried to toe the line between professional and personal, and his careful manipulation of Sisko and his setup of Cassidy was brilliant. It was a great plot and wonderfully pulled off. Also, why is Odo on the Defiant? He is head of station security, whilst a huge security risk is going on. He knows about it because he was in the initial briefing meeting, so obviously he has the clearance, and they expected the Maquis to try and steal it. Why is Odo not on the station? Sisko can make the arrest of the Maquis himself, and Cassidy was taken to a Federation penal colony, not a Bajoran one, like all Maquis caught by the Federation, so it wasn't even a Bajoran issue. Perhaps this could be viewed as further evidence of Odo's trusting Eddington to secure both the cargo and the station. Yes, Faye, that's exactly right. Maybe that is why Odo was on the Defiant.
Maybe it's also indicative of his relationship with Sisko and his wanting to, you know, to help him with something that he thinks is going to be problematic for him. Just a thought.
Yeah, all of these are excellent reasons why Odo was on Defiant. Bill, you're wrong.
Bill is usually wrong. Don't worry about it.
Hey, I'm just fictional. Doesn't matter.
Hey, at least in my fiction, you're real. In your dreams, I don't even get a part.
I don't want to know about Bill's dreams.
Anyway, I really liked this episode, and it was very nice to see Garak again. I don't really have much to say about this subplot, though. It was character building and a bit amusing, but I'm not a big fan of Zael overall, so I might be biased here. Until next time, Faith Gillian. Well, thank you, Faith. You were absolutely right in why Odo was on the Defiant.
Look, Andy, I'm sorry if David Tennant pushes you out of my dreams, okay?
There's a PS on Faith's...
is there? Oh, sorry.
I think we read that last time, didn't we? But we can read again.
Yes, we did. We did. We read that last time.
We brought it up and it's one sentence. P.S. I bought my own copy of A Stitch in Time and I definitely don't regret the purchase. It was the most I have ever paid for a used book, $38, but I was quickly rewarded and it will take a proud place on my bookshelf after I'm done with it.
Is this like those old 80s TV shows where we just use lots of stock footage to pad out the running time?
It's like the Flintstones where they run by the same window 80 times.
I'm going to use the same line that I used the last time. I'm still waiting for that check to clear.
Okay, so that's it for Faith's email. I'll read Howard's email about the visitor.
Okay.
It's Ira. okay, so what if we took that great DS9 episode Meridian, completely butcher the future timeline by casting Commander Kern as an older Jake with a weird accent, and then have it all wrap up like the last 10 minutes of Galaxy Quest with the Omega 13. Ron D. Sorry, Ira. That won't work unless we saddle everyone with horrible old person makeup and improbable backstories, except the one person who isn't aging. Ira. You're absolutely right. Admiral Nog wouldn't age a bit in this timeline, and we can't forget to include the usual quota of Deus Ex Machina technobabble. Great job, guys. FYI, I know he's RTF royalty, but you can't let Scott Gardner on this podcast again. He made DS9 sound like Star Trek the Motion Picture. Howard. I do find your dialogue there amusing, Howard. Let's start with that. As far as Scott has a different perspective on DS9 than us.
Yeah, he doesn't like it.
And I think sometimes it's worth indulging that to have him give us a counterpoint. I would rather not ever bring Scott in on an episode that we don't like, because then I'm afraid it's just going to be too much, you know, it's going to be piling on then.
Unless he liked it.
Yeah, if he has a counterpoint, I think it's worth having him on for that reason. Actually, because you mentioned that, and I don't know how familiar you are with Scott, but Scott loves Star Trek the Motion Picture. So, for what that's worth. But yeah, you know, Scott's our buddy, and I don't think we would tell him, no, he can't come on. But again, I would rather not have him on if it's an episode that we don't like and he doesn't like either, because I just feel like that would be piling on. But if he's giving an intelligent counter-argument to our like of an episode, I have no problem with that at all. I've always said I welcome dissenting opinions as long as they are given with some sort of reason.
Yes.
Alright, so we have one more. I guess, you know what, Bill, because you're going to do the book, I'm going to read this one also. Megan Galloway, because my first one was short, and this one was kind of short too. Megan Galloway writes in again, and she says, per the alternate, a.k.a. Odo-infected daddy issues. Now, we're going kind of far back on an episode here. This is the one, I believe, when Odo turned into a monster unwillingly. And it says, WTF with this racist, specious, changeling, spaceshifter hate attitude that out of everyone in sci-fi getting infected and turned into monsters. Odo has to be quarantined and separated from everyone after he is cured. Odo somehow has to have big repercussions. Where the hell do you get that mindset? The writers and producers were like me, probably said, screw it, if we try demanding this for Odo, then everyone has to be rabies quarantined after alien infections that change them into killers. Especially if literally into mutated monsters or not. Consider no one was getting a slap after Dramatis Persona, and they were nearly killing each other? Yeah, you know what? You're not wrong, Megan. I just think that there has been an element of distrust by the Federation to Odo and the shapeshifters that after they had an event where he kind of went out of control for a while, they would be, at a minimum, monitoring him closely to make sure this doesn't happen again. So it's definitely not shapeshifter hate, because I think, and it's been a long time since we recorded that episode, but I think we had said something to the effect of, we love Odo and know that he's not going to do this again, and we don't have a problem with him, but we could see where Starfleet might have a problem with it. So that's kind of my perspective on it, and I don't know if the boys agree or not.
Yeah, no, that seems quite reasonable.
So, that's our take. And thank you all, you know, thank you all again for emailing in, Faith, Howard, and Megan. We appreciate your thoughts, and we'll be hearing from you again, we believe. In the meanwhile, let's talk about A Stitch in Time.
Stitch in Time will save nine, especially with a needle fine.
All right, so I believe we are up to chapter 12, because I have actually started to take notes, keep track of where we are. Did you guys have a chance to read this? It's only a few pages.
Maybe.
No, because you only texted us at 11 o'clock last night for me.
No, I wasn't that late.
It was. I was busy watching Starsky and Hutch.
Oh, you've been up for 5 more hours than we have. You could have read. I was watching Starsky and Hutch. Okay. All right, whatever. Anyway, in chapter 12, and I'm not going to read it because it's rather quick, Garrett continues to progress at the Bomaran Institute. He excels in all areas, and his other counterpart, 8, because remember they're called 8 and 10, they have numbers, does as well, and the two are somewhat singled out by the rest of their unit. He has also continued to study Mila, not Kunis, the little... but you could put her face on it or something.
We would study that closely.
So, and that was the little Ragnar, the little creature he found out in the wilderness a few chapters ago, when he had learned how to use its technique. He has refined the technique of blending into his surroundings and suppressing himself from notice. Now, Mila is hidden in a compartment behind his locker, which they are not allowed by rules at the Institute. That's the one, like, the only private area that they are allowed to have is their compartment. Later, towards the end of the chapter, he is alone in his barracks, and a few of the others in the group, led by 3, discuss that 10, which is Garrick, must be hiding something in his locker, as he spends a great deal of time staring into it. So some of the group say, no, we shouldn't do this, it's against the rules, but 3 presses on and gets ready to go into his locker, and then Garrick, who has been actually laying on a cot the whole time, suddenly sits up in plain sight and you know, basically he scares the bejesus out of them, and he realizes that they're not going to be bothering anymore, and he has won a victory over them. And that's pretty much we start to the creepiness, or his skills are starting to be fine-tuned and honed in the book, and that's pretty much what the chapter covers. That was Stitch in Time, Deep Space Nine.
Stitch in Time, Deep Space Nine. Especially with the needle fine.
Ouch! So with that...
Yeah, not much to add to that. So I guess that's it for this week's episode. What are we looking at next time?
Next time, an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. It's a Deep Space Nine hit-and-run job to the death.
Total devastation. 18 confirmed dead, over 100 wounded. Demands total retaliation.
This isn't going to be a suicide mission.
To destroy the Jem Hadar.
Victory is life.
Sisko must lead his crew.
They'll become virtually invincible.
Into a no-holds-barred battle to the death.
I've always wanted to kill a Klingon.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Blah. It is a good day to die.
Ramming speed!
Kill me. Kill me, Quoth. Kill me.
Listen to the Prophets at Deep Space Nine podcast is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
Good night, Mr. Robinson.